Tzaiva, the category of Tzaiva. Of course, the Mishnah says that HaTzaiva v'kinav ha'kovav motzinas adam and Allah. So Rabbeinu Yonah talks about when he mentions Tzaiva, he mentions three categories of Tzaiva. He says the first category of Tzaiva is that he should have Oshon Chochma alone, no one else should have it. Second one is that he should exceed others in Oshon Chochma, that's the second category. And the third case is that he also should have, he doesn't care what others have. He hopes that God should give them as much as possible. But he also wants to be in that group that has it. Okay, so the question we asked was that this is not Tzaiva. He's not discussing Tzaiva. He's discussing kina, covet. He's not discussing Tzaiva. All right. So the answer we gave was that the Tzaiva of a person is different than the Tzaiva of a behemoth. Now, Tzaiva of a behemoth is really physical enjoyment. But the Tzaiva of an Adam is of a different nature. The nature of the Tzaiva of Adam, the underlying concept of a person having taiva, being a bal taiva, means simply to be able to follow along with his basic feelings, to live according to his basic feelings. That is the taiva. Taiva in Adam isn't that a person wants to eat and drink for the sake of eating and drinking, for the hanor, for the enjoyment per se. That's not the nature of taiva in Adam. The nature of Tzaiva in Adam is that he's seeking a certain state, a certain comfortable state. And this state is brought about through the Tzaivas. The Tzaivas give the person a feeling that he of satisfaction that he has from that state that he's looking for. The taiva in man is a sublimated concept. It's not just a concept that he's out after the particular enjoyment. The enjoyments that he seeks, give him a certain feeling, place him in a certain state of, it would be, in other words, luxuriating is not the taiva for luxuries is not really the luxury per se, but it's the sense that a person has that he is luxuriated, so to speak. Yeah, in other words, yeah, well, basically that's what it is. He's trying to return to a childhood state where everything is made comfortable for him. See, he wants to be in a certain comfortable frame of mind. And all the taivas serve to place him in that state, and to give him that feeling that he has that state. He's after a certain state, a certain mental framework that he's looking for. And the Baal Taiva is the person that follows. We mentioned the principle that of following what feels good. What feels good is good. Because he wants to be in the state where he feels he's being catered to. It's a concept of luxuriating, you see. Concept of luxuriating. The mistake that people make is they think that the person is after the taiva per se. It's not the particular achila that he's after, particular shia. It's the fact that he's in a state of luxury. You see. That state makes him feel, it gives him a certain comfort, a certain feeling. Of warmth, of satisfaction, of that it's a feeling that he's after. It's a general feeling. It's not the particular taiva that he's after. A human being is not after a taiva, like a behemoth is. A behemoth is after a specific desire, to satisfy a specific desire. A human being, it's a mental state. It's a mental state. Now, what the Perek is saying is that an individual that is given over to that kind of a way of life in which he simply wants to follow those things which give him that comfortable feeling, that type of an individual, it means basically he's living, he's trying to satisfy, recreate a childhood state, and he refuses to recognize that reality is such that this idea, this sense of satisfaction, is not a real one. And a person that lives in that frame of mind, where he must always simply follow his need for an emotional gratification without analyzing whether or not these gratifications are in fact to his benefit or to his detriment, such an individual is what we refer to as a Baal Taiva. And the Pirkei Avos is saying that a person that has those three things, the childhood state is basically expressed in three different trends. One is a trend towards satisfying that which feels good, satisfying that, living according to that which feels comfortable. That's one. And the second one, the second feeling that a person is looking for, is a feeling of the of kina. The second emotion is the emotion of kina. And when the emotion of kina, a person is basing his reality on what another individual has. That's the second aspect of the childhood state. And the third aspect is kava. The need for self-aggrandizement, the ego, the needs of the ego. So those three characteristics are the characteristic of the childhood state. And what the Eric is saying is that if a person is incapable of rising above that level, reaching a state of maturity where he can overcome those emotions and realize and think into his nature, be in a sense it's mavri al midosav, if he can't possibly be mavri al midosav, if another individual doesn't grow inside the person when he matures, that analyzes his nature and is able to use his chokhmah over these emotions, so then this individual is considered as if he's not seen Sodom and Olam, removes him from the world. He's removes him from the world of reality. Because basically these satisfactions are inherently insatiable. Inherently insatiable, and they take a person away from the real good. That's what we explain the parrot. Now let's return to the question. So the question was, why does Rabbeinu Yonah, under Taiva, why does he mention these three cases where he says that a person is interested in having Mamon and Chachma? Mamon and Chachma greater than any other individual. The answer now is clear. Because the emotions of an individual, when we speak about Taiva, what we're talking about is the natural draw of the emotions. A Baal Taiva is a person who can't overcome his natural feelings and inclinations. Can't analyze his basic inclinations. He follows his basic sense of desire. So the basic sense of desire, Rabbeinu Yonah says, attaches itself really to two things. It attaches itself for a person's desire to have osher, to have wealth, and to have chachma. But everybody recognizes that these two things are the greatest things in life. What person wouldn't want by nature to be a great chacham and to be to have endless amounts of money? I mean, that's the basic desire of an individual. So Rabbeinu Yonah again in Taiva understands that Taiva is not a physical desire, but Taiva is simply following the natural inclinations of man towards what he desires. And basically, the natural inclinations go towards two areas. A person wants to think that he would love to be the greatest chacham, and would love to be the most wealthy person. So wealth and chachma, even a person that has wealth, I mean, tries to impress people more with his chachma than with his wealth, but everybody recognizes that chachma is the greatest thing. What person wouldn't want to be known as the greatest chacham? Chachma is something which is universally recognized as the greatest good. So Rabbeinu Yonah says that in terms of this basic desire of man to have chachma, to be an individual who has chachma and has wealth, he says there are three forms. The first form he mentions is that he alone should have the chachma and the wealth. That's the first form. The second form, he says, not that he alone has the chachma and the wealth, But he says that he wants to exceed others. Ach shiyeh lo yosem mehem lizgadla leah. And the third form, he says, is where the person wants to have chachma. He doesn't care what others have. He's happy others have chachma wealth, but he too wants to be a part of that group. So Rabbeinu Yonah says that is not such a is not the worst, but it's not veina midas os shlema l'tov. V'safso mitzad ki achrei heim chacham munevon v'ashirim ki atayv aril atayv l'savos b'chachma mitzad ki oikir v'ashar shlavos ha'bar esbar. Okay. So he says that this third case also is not really the highest level. But why does he break it down to these three cases? I mean, it would seem you don't have to break it down to three cases. You just mention, as we said before, that taiva and man is a sublimated concept. Taiva and man is not after specific enjoyment. But taiva and man is to try to recreate a certain mental state. That's basically what he's saying. And this mental, what is the essence of this mental state that the person is attracted to? It's Osher and Chachma. That's what is. That's what he naturally desires. That's where the desires. That's in the area which desires of man lie. Because if he has the osher, so then he can luxuriate, and if he has the chokhmah, he can cater to his sense of self-importance. Okay. So the reason is like this. I think what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying, the concept Rabbeinu Yonah is saying is that a person in desiring. One time mentioned this. In the I believe it was in the we did the area of the Yafas Toach. That human desire is related to images, to a certain image. A person doesn't simply desire something. He always thinks in his mind whether in having what he's seeking he's satisfying a certain image. It's an image that a person is looking for. So Rabbeinu Yonah says that the natural inclinations of man set themselves up in terms of three different images. The first image that a person, the most extreme image that a person is looking for is an image where he alone has osher v'chavah. What does it mean? It means that the basic inclination of man, his basic desire is to be a one and only, to be completely different from other people. That's the most powerful basic desire. So people essentially are looking for a certain image that their lives should be able to be placed in their own mental framework in a certain image that they're completely different than others. There's no comparison between them and other people. And that is that's the first case that he mentions. The first case is that he alone is the one. Harishon Masavish Lo Yia Osher V'Chachma V'Shum Adam. Okay? Which means to say that the most extreme example, the most extreme, that is the basic, most basic drive in its full form, is that the individual should be completely differentiated, qualitatively differentiated from others. That's the most potent image, he says. The second image that people assume, people who aren't that radical. The second image that people assume is that others should have also, but he wants to exceed others. In the second case, the person doesn't demand. He isn't that far gone that he demands such an irrational thing that he should be completely differentiated from others, but simply quantitatively differentiated. Superior. The natural inclination of man is to seek out that image. A person who is not as obsessed as the first individual will seek out an image where he's superior, but he's not qualitatively differentiated. He's more rational about it. But nevertheless, it's a different image. You see, it's a different image. In the third case, Rabbeinu Yonah mentions. In the third case, the individual doesn't really care. The image that he has of himself is tied with a type of camaraderie. He doesn't really care to be greater than others, but he just simply wants to partake of the image. But he doesn't care for the superiority over others, but still he's attached to a certain image of his own self, which is that he partakes, he's an individual, he partakes of wealth and chachma. But what is it based upon? It's still based upon imagery. It's still based upon a certain self-image that he's looking for. You see. So the reason why Rabbeinu Yonah breaks it down into three classes, when the question, of course, is it the same thing? Is it a matter of degree? The answer is it's not a matter of degree, because there are three different types of images that a person is searching for. An individual, in other words, once again, a person is not looking for taiva per se. A person is looking in taiva for a certain feeling of satisfaction about himself. He wants to feel that he's happy, that he's in a certain state. Now, the state that he chooses, people attach themselves to three different states, three different images in their mind. One is an image of the self that is completely differentiated from others. That's one kind of image. The second kind is not as radical. It's not a qualitatively differentiated image. It's simply a superiority. He's satisfied with a superiority. In the third state, he's not necessarily seeking superiority, but he's still seeking a certain image of himself. So he doesn't care if others have the, others may also have the ocean of the chachma. It doesn't disturb them. Let them have whatever they want. But the point is, he wants to partake of it also because it's a type of image that he's seeking. He is a wealthy, intelligent person. It's an image that he's looking for, you see? And that's what Rabbeinu Yonah says in the third state. He says, Yesh tova ma'at, there is some good, it's not as bad. Of course, each state is a little better. But the third one, he says, is not as bad because he's happy that his chavra has chachma and osha like him. The only thing is, he says, Vein amidas as shlema letov. It's not really perfection. What's wrong with the third state? So he wants an image of himself. He's a wealthy, he's an intelligent person. A certain image that he desires. What's so terrible about that state? It's not a horrible thing. He doesn't care to be to impose himself over others. But he says, nevertheless, he says, Ki ataiva haru'uyo les avos b'chochma mitzad ki hi ho'ikr v'ashorash l'avodas habore es baruch. Which means to say that the true desire for chachma and the desire for wealth, which is a legitimate desire in Yadus, I mean, you see, chachma is all mispal for osher, mispal to be wealthy. But the true desire should not be based upon an image of himself. It shouldn't be based upon the desire to satisfy a certain image. But rather, the desire should stem from the recognition of the good per se. He should see the value of chachma per se and desire chachma because of its essential nature, not because he wants to have that feeling of comfort that he's in a certain state. It shouldn't be based upon images. But you have to understand, I mean, what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying... What Rabbeinu Yonah is saying is that the ultimate individual is one who desires chachma because he recognizes the benefits of chachma per se, and not because of other people, images that he has of other people in which he's trying to fit into that kind of an image. See, that's the third state. But most people, you have to understand, can't reach the final state without going through that third state, because Even though it's not the ultimate perfection, but people by nature are attracted to the good as they see it in terms of the another individual's image. Like they see people on a certain level and they have a desire to be a part of that group, so they want to be in that group. Like the Gemara says about Acha's father saw the Chachamim and he saw around the Chachamim was in his mind, some kind of a light. It meant to say that the image of the Chachamim was, he wanted that image. But the person that's truly perfected isn't interested in the good because of the type of image that is reflected by the people that have it. It's because of the good itself, you see. And that's what Rabbeinu Yonah says. So Rabbeinu Yonah says basically that a person cannot remove himself from taiva as long as he's attached to the concept of an image. Yeah. Because as long as he's attached to that concept of an image, he's looking for a certain infantile sense of comfort about in thinking about himself, rather than being attached to the good per se. And that's why an individual who is on that, who's operating, is functioning on that level, is looking for that image, functioning on that level, is still steeped in the infantile. That's what Rabbeinu Yonah basically says. So the reason why he has three images is because psychologically it's true that a person attaches himself to one of those three images. That's the nature of man. He's going to attach himself to one of those three. Of course, the most extreme is where he wants to be completely differentiated from other people. That's the highest level in terms of satisfying that image. The next is where he simply is quantitatively differentiated. And the third is where there's a certain camaraderie. He doesn't feel, it's not a competitive feeling. He's out of the realm of the competitive. But he still wants to have that sense of satisfaction. Mm-hmm. He's satisfying that image. He's a person, he's a chacham, he's an usher. He's comfortable with the image. That Rabbeinu Yonah says, as long as he's comfortable with the image, he's still functioning on an infantile level. And that's not really, even though there is tov there, there is good, because he's attaching himself to something which is not really evil. He doesn't want to raise himself above other people. He's not looking for power. But nevertheless, it's attached to a certain fantasy in satisfying a sense of the way he feels about himself. As long as he's looking for that, he's still rooted in the infantile. That's what Rabbeinu Yonah says. I mean, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, most of humanity is a bala taiva, because they're going to fall into either one of the three, usually. But that's why he emphasized the fact that the last level has some good in it, but it's not the ultimate. It has some good in the sense that he's looking for an image which partakes of the good, but not for the his emotions are not in line with the correct goal. So the only individual that has removed himself totally from the world of taiva is a person who's gotten over completely the desire to feel that he's partaking of a certain kind of image that other people reflect, and he's looking for the good in terms of the good per se. That's a very high level. Okay. The only sense that the perfected individual has, the legitimate sense about himself, is that his life is, a person has to reflect about himself. It's impossible for a person not to, because that's a person's nature. Unless a person like Moshe Rabbeinu was constantly involved in Chochmas Hashem. I mean, there's simply no time. There's no reflection on himself at all. It's constantly involved in Chochmas Hashem. But an individual normally has to think of himself in terms of his life. Where is he at? But the answer to the question of where he's at is not measured by the images that are reflected by society on any level, but they're measured in absolute terms. In other words, is he in line with reality, the way life is supposed to be lived, or is he departing from the way life is meant to be lived? See, that is the only image that he has. There is a reflection about the self, but the reflection about the self is in absolute terms, in terms of absolute reality, not in terms of any kind of images that are projected by people in society. That is the person that's risen above, according to an amazing Rabbeinu Yonah. I mean, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, that is the individual that's risen above taiva. Taiva is a sublimated concept. It's not, man does not have taiva per se like a behemoth has taiva. Achila for Shia. Everything he does, whether he indulges in Achila and Shia, it's simply to create a certain satisfying image about the self. That's what Rabbi Nathaniel meant. If a person indulges himself, it's not the enjoyment per se that he's looking for. The enjoyment is, he knows the enjoyment is momentary, so he enjoys the steak, so what? What he's after is really the feeling, the sense that he is this kind of a person. He is the type of person that enjoys and that has. If he's into wealth, so he's an individual that can luxuriate himself, can enjoy. It's the image of the self that is the taiva in man. It's a sublimated concept. Man is not given to real taiva, like in terms of just instinctual gratification. It's not satisfying him. Yes? Levi's mentioning is that there is a certain image that a person attaches to the chacham also. To the chacham also. But that Rabbeinu Yonah doesn't mention that tremendous. That's on the contrary. That definitely is a good image. The person, it's true. There is a means between the level where a person is trying to satisfy a certain image that he receives, that is projected from various individuals in society. There is a level where he's attached to the character of the chacham. That is good. That's Chazal say is dabei b'talmid chacham. That is a good thing. If provided it's not the image that is reflected by the society of the chacham, but it's the true image of the chacham. In other words, an image that's reflected by society of the chacham, society converts it into an ego type of thing. If it's attached to that, so there's no difference whether it's attached to a chacham or it's attached to an asher. What's the difference there? It's the same thing. Basically the same thing. But if it's really, if he's attached to the character of the chacham, that is on the contrary. That's his dabek v'talmid chacham. And eventually he will be able to, through being the, that's what Chazal said, that a person is dabek v'talmid chacham. Because through that means, he will be able to reach the level of yediyas Hashem, of knowledge of God. That is a true image. That's a true image. But not the projected image from society. You have to be careful with that. Because society takes the chacham and projects and makes a certain image out of him, which projects to the masses in terms of simply a very great person. With that image can be attached to anything. It can be attached to the great businessman. It can be attached to the great baseball player. It can be attached to any individual. That's just an image of greatness. But if he really is attached to the character of the chacham, because he recognizes that the chacham is a different kind of a person. That is a good. That is certainly good. That's a mitzvah midaraisa. Of course, the final stage after that is the next stage. It's only natural that a person has to have that stage. But the next stage after that is where he sees chachma itself, and there's no reason for any images whatsoever. He just sees chachma Hashem. In other words, that's the difference between psychology and between the philosophy of Yadus. Psychology does not analyze does not have a universal neurosis. There's no universal. If a person is normal, if he's within the realm of what society is doing, he's normal. Functioning, he's normal. That's considered normal. But Yadus maintains that the human species per se has neuroses. The neuroses of the human species per se. And if the purpose of Yadus to give a person the opportunity to rise above the universal defect of the species.
In the case where the person is pursuing the ideal.
The point in Yadus, that's why Yadus really never puts down any enjoyments per se, because enjoyments per se are not really bad. I mean, the contrary, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. You say you make a bracha every day, Barna Fashas Rabbis Chasranan, I'll call Masha Baralach Yasbad Nefesh Kochoi. Means that on the contrary, a person appreciates the fact that God created the man in a way that he has to eat, but he made the food very tasty, and he gave a person the ability to have, to partake of food or enjoyments which give him satisfaction. That's on the contrary. That's part of Chochmas Hashem, that the universe should unravel in a way that man doesn't just survive, but man is able to enjoy it. But the enjoyment is not only enjoyment; it's the perspective. It's the perspective, and it's the value that's attached to it. On the contrary, what I say by Yitzchak, by Yitzchak Avinu before he gave the brachas to Yaakov. He said, Havil li tzayir vaseh li matamim kasher ahavti. So Yitzchak enjoyed the matamim. I mean, he can't say otherwise. There's nothing wrong with the enjoyment of the matamim. But if the enjoyment of the matamim is based upon the fact that he's catering to an infantile state that he's looking to desire, then it's then of course it's tzaiva. But it's simply the enjoyment per se. There's nothing. Same thing with Osher. Same thing with Osher. The best concept of the best descriptive concept of Osher is a Rabbeinu Yonah, really. Rabbeinu Yonah says that how should an Osher look at his wealth? He says he should look at his wealth like a person would if the king would tell him, look, you be in charge of the treasury. He says, and you can take anything you want, but you're in charge of the treasury to give out the portion of money in accordance with my plan so that the state should have what it needs. But while you're in the process, you can take anything you want. Because that's the true concept of Ashiras. So he recognizes that he doesn't have a sense, there is no sense of bilus, no obsession with the bilus of the money. But on the contrary, it's a practical thing. But for himself, he could take whatever he needs, but there's no obsession with the usher. That is the true usher. That's how Ben Yonah gives that description. It's an excellent description because it removes the obsession. The obsession is the evil, not the partaking of the not having the money. The money is good. On the contrary, it portions it properly according to the way he's supposed to. According to Halacha, Halacha tells a person how to live with usher, and such an individual really enjoys his usher to a far greater degree than the one who is obsessed with the usher, and it becomes something which basically strangulates him. Yeah, I mean, creates daiga. How would a person feel if he was by the usher and just took whatever he wants? They feel every time he takes them, he feels tremendous, like he has whatever he needs. No worry about it, and pure gain. Nothing to worry about. But once he becomes obsessed with it, then it becomes something which he he hoards and which he is concerned about, which he worries about, and which he can't enjoy anymore. So the Rabbeinu Yonah gives the healthy attitude towards Ashiras. But Ashiras is certainly a bracha. But what Yadis maintains is Yivarecha, this week's parsha, say by Avram, Vavarecha b'mama. B'mama, Rashi says. B'mama. It means money. A person has money. Doesn't have to worry about, doesn't have to be concerned about where he's going to earn his livelihood. It's a tremendous bracha, Birkas Hashem. Advertising shows you that it demonstrates this katzah. That it's the image. Everything is the image. It's not the enjoyment, it's the image. I mean, you see from the phenomenon of advertising that this is the nature of man. Man isn't looking for a specific enjoyment. Looking for an enjoyment that gives him the ability to have that feeling, that satisfaction, that he is now satisfying a certain image. Yeah. It comes out just the opposite. It comes out the person that's looking for the image doesn't really enjoy the physical. Because the physical enjoyment is only a means for that image. He's constantly concerned about whether he has that image or not. So it becomes a great source of worry for him. Whereas the Chacham really enjoys the specific thing he's involved in. He enjoys the steak, he enjoys the good food. He enjoys it, but it doesn't have that value. It has a lower value, but he has the enjoyment. The other person, it has a greater value, and it reduces the enjoyment. And so the Chacham enjoys the time more. Yes? People who are involved in, people who are alcoholics, or are involved in, or are drug addicts, are people who have failed in life to be able to satisfy that image of being Balei Taiva. And that's why they seek a situation in which They are not in reality anymore.
So what is that?
They can't tolerate reality.
What is that pursuit that they're doing? Are they trying to...
It's not a pursuit. No. That results from a total failure, from a depression. In other words, an individual who can't face reality, who has been unable to satisfy any image for himself, will be totally frustrated, and because of the pain, will have to try to escape reality. That's basically what it is. It's a failure. And unfortunately, it goes hand in hand. Because of the fact that society only values images, it causes a great part of its people to fall prey to addiction. Because it places such a high value on image. And therefore, most people can't satisfy the image because the demands are too great. I mean, basically, the image that most people are looking for, at least, is the second level of Rabbeinu. At least the second level of Rabbeinu, for superiority. And because everybody can't be superior, because it's simply impossible, so the society itself causes people, is responsible for people being grossly unhappy. Because how many people can be superior? Only a certain amount. I mean, even if the people have imagination, there's only a limit up to a certain point. So what happens is that the people become very unhappy, very dissatisfied with themselves, and life becomes intolerable, so they must seek an escape. They must seek an escape. Society, basically, the society that we live in is a society that causes gross unhappiness for most people. Unless they can pull themselves away from the effects of the society of the images. Because everywhere you turn to society, there's always a spotlight. And the people who are in the spotlight are the ones that are envied, and they're the ones that people measure their images against. And most people cannot fool themselves to the point where they can actually be convinced that they are that individual that's in the spotlight. They can't. So therefore, no, that's what people do. That's the solution. And since that solution is untenable, what happens is society of necessity causes tremendous unhappiness for its people.
Rather than talk about this.
The Jewish education finds itself in the midst of a certain society and it's affected tremendously by the society. That's why, for instance, in most yeshivas, unfortunately, the idea of learning is tied to the idea of becoming a gadol. I mean, this is really promoted to a tremendous degree. I know, I mean, I've gone through the system. And that's different. Kindness of Naruchav is a different thing. It means that, first of all, it doesn't say that that's the proper image to strive for. It just says that the kinna happens to have it's not a good thing, but it happens to produce a certain effect. I mean, all right, even if you say it is a good thing, it's still a good thing in the framework of the person's mekane, the good. But not if a person is looking for the image of superiority. And that's what many yeshivas produce. They tell a Talmud, they say, look, you could become a gadol b'Yisrael. And therefore, he really believes it. My head is not there. I don't have the intellectual capacity of a Chaim Eiser. Doesn't matter. Vilna v'stazayin agayin. They'll tell you that some gedolim are very unintelligent, which I don't believe. But they'll tell you they really were not intelligent, but they worked very hard. And if you work very hard, you also can do it. You see, it's a very sad kind of way to promote scholarship, promote avastar. Because what it does is, the end result is, there are too many karbonas, tremendous amount of karbonas, because first of all, it's wrong, it's not the proper approach, because you're never going to get people to learn Lishma with that method. And secondly, people become very disillusioned after a certain amount of time, and then they just say, give it up. I mean, I know myself, Chaverim that I had, and you know, when I was younger, that have told me that they simply can't learn anymore because their whole learning was attached to this kind of a thing, and now they see that they didn't make it. They're not going to make it. So what's the purpose of learning? So learning becomes a very sad, painful thing. When you look at a blot of Gemara, they just think of what they could have been, and a lot of times they think, well, if I would have tried a little harder, you know, I could have done it, and therefore, why should I sit down and learn a black and white? It represents failure. It represents a failure, associated to a failure, and they can't learn anymore. Not a very good form of motivation. Not good. But basically, where did it come from? It came from the motivation of the society. society infiltrates Judaism to a very great degree in a way that people don't realize. And they try to point to, they try, of course, to support it by pointing to different chazal, but they point to different chazal, but they're not really, that's not what chazal meant. And it's an unfortunate situation. There is such a thing as appreciation of a gadol, but the appreciation of a gadol should be for the ideas and for the way of life that he reflects, not for his stature vis-a-vis other people. That's what's wrong. That was wrong. Certainly, I mean, we are, and on the contrary, what happens is that if a person becomes completely ego-oriented, which happens in yeshivas, he really can't appreciate the gadol, because he doesn't want to it's painful for him to recognize that the gadol is so much superior to him, because that represents his failure. If a person, it works in reverse. If a person appreciates the gadol because of the way he lives and because of the ideas he represents and feels it's an opportunity that he has to learn from the gadol how to partake of a much, much superior life, you see, then he's not disturbed by the fact that Avraham Avinu is so far so much greater than him that he can never reach his level. Doesn't disturb him, on the contrary. He's not it's something which he is happy that there was such an individual that he can gain from through insight. But the moment it becomes egocentric, ego-oriented, then it's destructive. Yeshivas make use of such things because that's there's a reason for it, because it's very attractive. And it gets a lot of people into learning. Keep the storm very well, because they think they're going to eventually become gadolim. But it's a very sad. The problem is, what is the problem? The problem is that you cannot reduce or suppress the energies of man. The energies of man have to have an outlet. So therefore, the basic approach that the energies take is like Rabbeinu Yonah says, for the images. Now, if you're going to, in a communist country, what you're doing is, you're trying to suppress that satisfaction of the image. Now, by doing that, you're not replacing with anything. So therefore, it leads to total despondency, where people are unproductive. People are unproductive. You see, you're trying to substitute with security. Yeah, but security is not really a very good substitute. Security. Yeah, I'll tell you why. Because security is not a positive thing. Security is just avoidance of pain. Because what is security? Security means they don't have to worry. A person can't be happy if he doesn't have to worry. Yeah, exactly. It's not a positive thing. Just like I mentioned, people say, the main thing is to be healthy. The main thing may be to be healthy, but you can't be happy being healthy. Just walk around, I'm healthy today. So what is this? What does that prove? See, a person wants more. A person wants something positive. Being healthy is the avoidance of pain. And the same thing with security. Security means that you don't have to be concerned. You're not going to, you won't starve to death. Fine. You can't live when you're not going to starve to death. So the only way, what Yadus maintains is that you can't suppress the desire and the need for satisfaction of images. What a person has to do, the only thing you can do is you can raise a person to a higher level by taking those energies and directing them towards a higher concept of reality, and directing them towards living in a way where the person is involved in the true pursuit of chachma. Then he can abandon the images. He can't just abandon images. It has to be a replacement. The replacement has to be the appreciation of chachma, and the understanding of what man's function is, and the satisfaction of living in line with his nature. That satisfaction has to be the one that replaces the other psychological satisfaction. But without that, you can't do it. You can't just suppress psychological. Otherwise, you wind up with a drug addiction, like I mentioned before. There's a despondency. Lack of productivity. Mishnah of Beis. So Beloza Kapar continues. Hayiludim lomos v'amesim lahachayos v'achayim ligun. Leida lohdia livoda. By the way, there was one more point I want to mention in the last Mishnah, the Rambam. The interesting is the Rambam, because the Rambam says in the last Mishnah, he doesn't say too much, but he says one thing. Ki be'ela hamidos o ba'achas mehen, yafsid emunas ha-Torah behechrach, v'lo yagiulo lo mailos sichlios lo mailos hamidos. It's an interesting thing. The Rambam mentions that when it says motzi, what does it mean, motzi nesodom and olam? He says with one of these trends, one of these midos, one of these characteristics, a person can never reach perfection. It's an amazing thing. Which goes in line with what we're saying. In other words, if a person is rooted, if a person cannot raise himself above the infantile, either in, if he's rooted in kinah, or if he's rooted in the need for self-importance, or if he's rooted in the in following the comfortable life, taiva, you see, then he could never reach any kind of perfection. He says, lo milo sichlios, lo milo samidos. What the Rambam means is that there is so much energy attached to these areas that once a person is steeped in one of them, it means it makes it impossible for him to arrive at any degree of perfection in any area. Because perfection demands a certain type of objectivity, a certain type of gavra. And that's why I mentioned why Chazal always say that they differentiate between Chachomim and between Amei Haaretz. The Amei Haaretz were very upset about that. Because like Rabbi Akiva says, when I was an Amei Haaretz, I used to say, give me a Talmud Chacham and I'll bite him like a donkey. Why he hated the Chachomim when he wasn't a Chacham? Why? Because he sensed that the Chachomim looked down on the Amei Haaretz, that they're completely qualitatively differentiated. And it's true. But what is the qualitative differentiation? The qualitative differentiation is that a new area of reality becomes open to the Chacham. Because his mind investigates even his most basic desire. And the regular and average person cannot do such a thing. He's never been trained in such a process. To be a Talmud Chacham is a whole different training. It means his basic desires that are very powerful, his desire for comfort, and his, all the feelings that he has, a Talmud Chacham analyzes every one of those emotions to see whether it's within reality or it's not within reality and how to cope with it. It's a different process, a different kind of a life, and that's why the Talmid Chacham looked at the Amei Haaretz as different kinds of people, because they don't undergo this type of investigation. They haven't split the mind from the emotions. The emotions have total control and the mind simply follows. And that's why basically Chachamim lived that way, but for the Amei Haaretz had a terrible complaint, because they sensed that in the Chachamim, and there are certain halachas also. You're not allowed to spend time with the Amei Haaretz because of the Amei Haaretz took it personally. But it wasn't a personal thing. It was simply an objective differentiation between two different types of people. The Talmud Chacham is functioning as a human being and analyzing every emotion that he has and every basic desire. Most people simply cannot do it. If you ask a person, what is your opinion on any issue, I mean a political issue, the person feels that what is his opinion? That which is comfortable within the framework of his feelings. He doesn't even have a concept that there may be reasons why he feels comfortable with this position or with this opinion. And if he'd analyze it, he'd find that they're totally crazy. And basically, I think Socrates tried to do that. Socrates tried to show people that their conclusions are not based on any kind of analysis, but their conclusions are just based upon the way they feel about things. Like they're convinced death is bad, and they're convinced that enjoyments and pleasures are good. Only simply because they feel that way. They haven't been able to analyze it. They're convinced that courage is a certain type of form to it, and when you analyze it, it doesn't make any sense. And Socrates tried to show people that their ideas are just based on their feelings, and not based in reality, and if they'd analyze with their mind, they see that's completely crazy. And that's basically what Socrates said. But the Talmud Chacham is the one that is not prone to draw any conclusions based upon his feelings. It's a different kind of a thing. It's a different kind of objectivity. Different level of objectivity. That's why the Rambam says, for a person, that's exactly what Chazal mean over here. That these three things are Motzinas, Odom, and Olam. It means he could never arrive at any kind of level of objectivity unless he can overcome these, unless he can rise above the basic instinctual. And that's these three areas. Any one of them, if he's attached to any one of them, it will trap his energies to the degree that he could never reach perfection. That's what Rambam says. Yes? Hayiludim lomas. those who are born, let's take Rabbeinu Yonah. I say let's take Rabbeinu Yonah because his approach is the easiest. The Rambam is a little more difficult. Yeah. Hayiludim Lomos. What does he say? Me'achar she'sofon Lomos Vayom Bachayim. Rabbeinu Yonah. So Rabbeinu Yonah says, Hayiludim Lomos Me'achar she'sofon Lomos. Since eventually they're going to die, those who are born, he says, Vayom Bachayim Amocha Bekever. Today they're alive, and tomorrow they're in the grave. Yesh lehem lahara b'maseim v'losha b'shura. Just the opposite. You say the philosophy that the old philosophy, the ancient philosophy, that a cholish seki mocha namos. That's what people say. Look, you have to get the most out of life because how long is life? You have to make the most out of it. So the fact that a person is going to die doesn't necessarily cause him to reflect on his meisim and think in terms of tshuva. On the contrary, he's going to die, so most people feel that way. Most people always think that if they're missing enjoyment, they feel that they're losing out in life. That's what they have to make the most of it, because how long is it? Okay. So what does it mean? Ruben Loma, so what? V'amesim l'hachayos. Those who are dead are eventually going to live. What does he say? Ki yachayim Hashem yisbarach lasid lava. Kimo shenem b'daniel. V'rabim yishenye admas ofo yekitzu. Eile l'chaye olam v'eile l'cherpos l'daron olam. Al ken yesh lodem lasos ma sheyiye min achayim. I'm sorry. Ken yesh lo adam lasos. I think it should be kadesh yiyah min achayim. V'lo deron olam. Okay. Yeah.
What?
He's referring to the meals of tchias amesim. And v'achayim, those who are alive, he says, lo dunosom. Lo dunosom. Shasidim lahachayos. Yamdu l'din l'fnei Hashem yisbarach v'yitain lehem kefolam k'maisa yadeya. And v'achayim lidan, that the ones who are living are judged. But that's already included in Hamesim L'achayos, because in Hamesim L'achayos he's saying they're going to be judged. As a matter of fact, Rabbeinu Yonah makes the problem more difficult. It says, v'achayim l'odin osam sh'asidim l'achayos yamdu l'din l'fnei Hashem yisbarach v'yitain lehem kefolam k'maisa yadeya. Alright, he continues. He says, Leda, to know, Lehodia, to make known, Ulehi Voda, and to be known. Alright. That what? Alright, then he goes, Shu Kael, Hu Yotzer, Abari, Hu Maven. Okay. Now, what does he say? Leida lodia ulivoda. Rabbeinu Yonah says like this: Kulam tzrichim ladas hazeh. They all have to know this. All means, I guess, the yiludim and the leida me'acherim sheyilamdu aso. Leida means he has to learn from others. Lodia. He should teach others in this world. Livada means that it will be known. Or as eventually there's going to be a time that the Chachmas Hashem will be known. The Chachmas Hashem will be known. Everybody will know God. Everybody will recognize God. So that's Livada. Leida means that. So Leida means that he must learn himself. Lodia means once he learns himself, he has to teach others. And Livada means that eventually there won't be any need for any Malamed, but eventually everybody will know it by themselves. What will they know? they'll know Shehu Kael, who are Yotzer, who are Bori, who are Maven, who are Dayan, who Aid, who Baldin, who Wasid Lovin, Barho. Okay. Who are Yotzer and who are Bori means that that Yotzer means that God created man. He created man. But Bore means that he completed his creation. Gemarmelot. Now he says, Rabbeinu Yonah says, that our, the concept of our, of us being a created being, created beings, is not like a person would create a an object. Because if a person creates a kli, so then the kli exists without the person who created it, without the creator. Now the person builds a house, so the person who builds the house dies, but the house remains. But with a relationship to God, this is not so. In relationship to God, every moment of existence is contingent upon his will. Why? There's a simple reason for it. The reason is a logical reason. Because the reason why the house continues after the builder dies is because the builder, in building the house, is employing certain laws of nature. So what he's doing is, he's changing a given order, but the new order that he creates is dependent upon the laws of nature. Otherwise, the house could not exist. So that's why, even though he ceases to exist, but the house continues. But with God, you can't say that God created man and now the laws of nature continue his existence, because where are the laws of nature deriving their existence from? The laws of nature have to derive their existence from some source, and the laws of nature derive their existence from God. So therefore, man by nature would never continue to exist if it wasn't for God's will that these laws should exist. Which means to say that God is constantly involved in the existence of the individual. That's what the Rambam says in the beginning of the Yad HaChazakah. That if it would be construed for a moment that God doesn't exist, nothing would exist. That's the Yisod of our Amunah. Why? Because what we're saying is not simply that God created the world and then it goes on its own. That's nonsensical, because if you say God created the world, it means that he created certain laws that permit existence, permit things to exist. But then his will has to constantly be that these laws should exist, because by nature they wouldn't exist. By nature they wouldn't exist. So therefore, if it would be imagined, the Rambam said, that God doesn't exist, nothing exists. If it could be imagined that God would cease to exist, then nothing would continue to exist. Because existence derives from God. Constantly derives from God. Yes?
Well, can you talk about a man's death?
But it wasn't even a person's fault that God alone. It means that if you sin against another human being, basically it's a sin against God. Essentially it's a sin against God. Because the very existence of the other human being is really an existence that was created by God. He's a created existence. So ultimately the Baal Din is God. Ultimately, the Baal. It's true that you may have to ask mechila from the other person, but that's only because God endowed the other person with certain rights. So therefore, since he has rights, so therefore you have to go and you have to ask him for mechila. But essentially, the chote is really a chote against only one, and that's against the Kadosh Baruch. Okay. Then he says, Ram says that you can't. What does it mean that you can't bribe God? It means to say that a person.
There's no biddle.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, people always think of it that way. Because somebody was wrote me a letter a few months ago. They were criticizing, happened to be a relative, but they're criticizing the relative. And they're saying they weren't that religious, so they're criticizing the relative that was religious. So what good is their whole religion and their whole frumkeit if they can do this to me? You say, of course, it's always to me. They're saying the whole frumkeit is worthless. That person's from, and they was in regard to a woman. It says she covers her hair, and she's religious, and she davens. But what good is it if they can do this, so the whole thing is worthless? So I told them, I said, no, you're making a mistake, because it's not true. Whatever good a person does is not going to be canceled out, because even if we should assume that this person is not doing the right thing for you, is not doing the right thing by you, they're wrong. But it's not going to cancel out the good. I mean, if they're from, they keep halacha, they'll receive schar for doing that. You can't say this. It's not correct to say that what good is all frumkeit if they violate this halacha. There's no such thing. Whatever they do proper and good, they'll receive the reward for. And if they do something bad, they'll receive an onus. That's what the Rambam says. It means to say that God's judgment is not like the judgment of a person. That's what it means to say. The judgment of a person is, you think to yourself, is this a good person or is this a bad person? So you evaluate the way the person treated you. If the person on the whole did you a tremendous amount of chesed, tremendous amount of favors, even though they may have slighted you in a small degree, you say, ah, forget about that. You see, you're really good people. But a Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't work that way. Why? A person works that way because a person is really, even though he makes judgments with regard to individuals, but the judgment is always basically, even if it's, I mean, real shochet, of course, is crooked. But this concept is a little more far removed. Even though a person may judge another individual whether he's good or bad, the bottom line is he only cares whether you can classify him as a good person or a bad person. Because, well, in any framework. But the point is he's looking to classify the individual because the individual has some type, even if it's remote, it's some type of utilitarian concept. You know, is he a good person or is he a bad person? See? But HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't really care whether he is a good person or a bad person because he has no need for people. So in God's judgment, the way God...